driven to center, and this one is well hit, and this one is gone. Well, that'll make him feel a whole lot better. Chapman, who's had a lot of warning track fly balls already this season, drives one out to straightaway center, and it is 2-0.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And today is Tuesday, May the 17th, the morning after a nice, clean, crisp Blue Jays win. Probably the best game that they have played collectively in a long while. Starting pitching was really solid. He had some homers coming through. He had some hits with runners in the scoring position. The defense was sound. I mean, just a well-played, well-rounded ball game. And Ben, you were down there at the ballpark on Monday, but you weren't necessarily there to watch the Blue Jays win. You were there to spend more time on the visitors' side, really, because look, the Seattle Mariners are in town, and Robbie Ray, who won the 2021 American League Cy Young Award with the Toronto Blue Jays, had a spectacular season, now pitches for the Seattle Mariners. So like, this was a day that was circled on the calendar for Robbie Ray's return to Toronto as the defending Cy Young champion. And you know, how did you find that, catching up with Robbie Ray on Monday at the ballpark?
Well, I wish I could tell you. I wish I had had that experience, because the Mariners, you know, they didn't announce anything with respect to Robbie Ray. They put Drew Steckenrider on the restricted list, and I thought, okay, I'll walk into the visiting clubhouse and see if Robbie Ray's there. Maybe he'll want to chat about how close he came to signing. Right. He pitched on Sunday, so it would be, you know, often the day after a starting pitcher pitches. That's a great chance to kind of catch up with them. They've got some time. They're not even throwing a bullpen that day. And so looked around, kept walking through that visiting clubhouse in search of that Ray locker, and did not find it. And so I asked, you know, the PR, is Robbie Ray here? And the response, have not seen him today, which is a very cryptic answer.
The PR who flew on the charter with the entire team. Got it.
Yes. And then, you know, later, you know, asked Scott Servais, the Mariners manager. Seems like a really bright guy, by the way, and nice to kind of hear his perspective on some things to do with the game. But in any case, asked him, is Robbie Ray here? No, he is not here, and declined to elaborate on that. And I'm sure everybody listening here is probably making a guess, and I think that's probably a very good guess if you're making that guess at home. But there has been no announcement. We know that there is a mandate for any athlete entering Canada to be double vaccinated. That's different than it was last year, of course, when the Blue Jays played under a national interest exemption that allowed them and their opponents to come through regardless of vaccination status. But that's changed this year. And so, you know, whether or not that connects to Robbie Ray, we can't say definitively, but we do know that he was not there. We do know that there was no chance for the Blue Jays players to connect with him. Of course, he trains in Arizona. They haven't seen him whatsoever this year. And the fans who cheered him on had him win a Cy Young in Toronto, joining Pat Hankin and Roger Clemens and Roy Halladay. I mean, that's a pretty small group when it comes to Blue Jays history and the great pitching seasons that we've seen here, and it will not be celebrated.
And just in the world of baseball, it is unusual for a starting pitcher, even if he is not pitching in that particular series, to not travel with the team and to not be with them for a road series. Like, this isn't a common thing. It's not like, oh, you know, Hyunjin Ryu isn't pitching in these two games in New York, so he's not going to go with the team. He goes with the team and he's there because the pitcher still has work to do in between his starts. Like, Robbie Ray's side session would be thrown during this series, and I would imagine that bullpen session would be something Robbie Ray would want to throw before the Mariners pitching coach and with the catcher who he's going to be working with in games, so they could continue to refine and work on adjustments. So if anything, like, it would make the most sense for the Mariners to have Robbie Ray in Toronto this week.
Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, especially when you think about returning players like, yeah, Jose Bautista or Josh Donaldson, someone who's significant to the franchise. Now, there is almost always a media availability set up by the visiting PR for that first return. And there's usually a really big scrum over on the first base side or in the first base dugout. I can distinctly remember Bautista coming back and Donaldson coming back. You know, yeah. It's kind of a staple of that.
And
kind
Canacion
of,
too.
Right. Yeah. Eddie. I mean, I'm sure there are tons more over the years. It's just one of those things that happens as far as baseball media coverage. And Robbie Ray wasn't there. So, you know, in the case of the Mariners, it's not a huge impact one way or the other because they only do visit Toronto once a year. If they make the playoffs and the Blue Jays are in the playoffs, maybe that's a different scenario. But it is very different than the American League East teams where, you know, those teams, from my understanding over the offseason, they were making player acquisitions and player moves with very much thinking of vaccination status in mind. That was a very big deal for certain free agent pursuits. I think that clearly, you know, Trevor Story was able to cross the border. Players with the Yankees were able to cross the border. Some of those situations ended up getting resolved, but that was a big factor. And of course, for the Blue Jays, it's the biggest factor of all. And it makes you wonder, you know, again, reading between lines, connecting dots. We don't know exactly what anyone's vaccination status is unless they choose to share it or unless they appear in Toronto, then we know. It does make you wonder like how a pursuit would go for an unvaccinated player for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, man, right? Like, it's unfortunate for a few reasons. Like, the evidence for the efficacy of vaccination against COVID-19 is overwhelming. And outside of, like, some very specific and isolated circumstances, like, it's a no-brainer to get vaccinated against COVID-19. So it's a very, I'm just speaking generally, but it's not speaking about anybody specific, just generally. It's very unfortunate for that reason. But it's also unfortunate because, like, Robbie Ray is one of very few Toronto Blue Jays to win a Cy Young Award, right? We were talking Clemens, Henkin, Holiday, and Robbie Ray. That's it. So one of four Toronto Blue Jays. And I mean, Holiday would have been the last one. And that would have been like 20 years ago, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, this is something that does not happen often in Toronto. And I am sure that the 30,000 fans who showed up at Rogers Centre on Monday, first day or night, I guess, that the dome is open, right? Like a great, beautiful May Toronto night. The home team is back from the road and they're playing well on this night in particular, not so much in weeks prior. We'll get to that. But it was just a great baseball night in Toronto. And I'm sure those fans would have loved to show their appreciation for what Robbie Ray did in their team's colors. Like, as you mentioned, there could have been the big pregame scrum. They could have presented him the Cy Young Award there at Rogers Centre, had a video tribute, standing ovation. Charlie Montoyo comes out and like gives him a hug, like the whole nine yards. Like, it would have been a really cool moment. And because of a choice that I am assuming he's made, one that I perceive to be pretty baseless and unwise, Blue Jays fans didn't get to have that moment, and the organization didn't get to have that moment either. So it is unfortunate that that didn't get to happen.
Yeah, it really did feel like there was something kind of missing, you know, and of course, those questions were occurring, and you see other players reuniting with Charlie Montoyo or with various Blue Jays behind the backstop, right? The way you do for the first game of a series, especially the first time two teams are meeting, especially for teams that train in different, you know, Grapefruit League versus Cactus League. Like, they legitimately haven't seen these Mariners in a long time, and it just felt like there was something missing there. So the life goes on. The baseball calendar kind of turns the page pretty quick, but that was an interesting little sequence of events there.
And the other thing that really bothers me too, though, is that, so we know the Blue Jays went pretty far down the road in negotiations with Robbie Ray this past offseason. Like,
right.
The Blue Jays have said that. Robbie Ray has said that. So if, like, satisfying everything that is required for entry into the country of Canada was, like, a non-starter, they couldn't have gone that far down the road. They wouldn't have, because then the Blue Jays just say, oh, okay, we just cannot, like, sign you because you cannot enter the country where you're going to play your home games. So clearly there was a threshold, or there was a point at which everything would have been satisfied in order to gain entry to Canada. So then just do it. Like, what? Clearly there is an openness and a willingness to do it. So friggin' do it, man. We shouldn't go too far down this road, but, like, if there was, you know what I mean? Like, if the Blue Jays gave Robbie Ray 125 million reasons to do it, and he would have been willing to do it at that point, you should probably just do it anyway, because it's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah, certainly no debate on the public health side of things there. But yeah, you know, you do see, you hear rumblings about players where, you know, there were kind of thresholds involved. And I guess it's probably not a shock. That's probably the case for any set of human beings, including Major League Baseball players.
Yeah. And look, this, you got to remember, this is MLB, right? It's not NHL, where I think there was like one guy in NHL who right. didn't have his yeah. his vaccination against COVID-19. I think that, you know, in MLB, like, you think about where the player population typically comes from, like Southern United States, think about the vaccination rates down there and some of the beliefs, you know, in places like that. And like, it kind of, it's understandable there's more MLB players that aren't vaccinated than maybe in other sports. But this is another way, man, that the COVID-19 pandemic continues to impact the Blue Jays more than any other team in baseball, right? You look at the past 2 years and you think about the uncertainty over where they're going to play in minor league ballparks and the amount of games that they played away from home and bubbling at Rogers Center. Like, this, we've been over it, right? But it continues to impact the Blue Jays because vaccination status is something that has to be a consideration. Like, it was a consideration during the offseason in free agent negotiations. It was a consideration in trade discussions. Yeah. And it's going to continue to be a consideration this July as the club looks to upgrade at the deadline, right? You think about like the Simber and Richards deals last year, which were like so important to this club and really, like, you know, righted the ship for the bullpen and got things back on the rails in a lot of ways. If the Blue Jays are looking to do that again this year, something similar and something early, when not a lot of players are typically available, and it's like, oh yeah, here is a guy who could help us who is available, you contact that team. Hey, does that guy have his shots? Oh, he doesn't. Over. You got to go somewhere else. You cannot consummate that trade. So this is something that is continuing to impact the Blue Jays going forward.
And it's not a hypothetical. It's very real. And I think even this year, it's not my place to say, but you hear rumblings about certain players that could be on the market this year that, you know, might not be really options for the Toronto Blue Jays. So it impacts them the most. It impacts Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays the second most. And then it impacts everybody else. I'm not including the Orioles, because until they are more competitive, they're not going to be buyers at the deadline or buyers anytime, even though there's a strong case to be made that they should, but they are not. So
if you're not trying to win, we do not consider you.
Exactly. So as Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, they do have to consider this for sure. And then beyond that, you know, the, I guess, other American League contenders would have to look at it in the context of a playoff series.
So the Blue Jays in general, I mean, look, yes, they had a very fine effort on Monday in the opener against the Seattle Mariners, but that's only one game. And obviously over the prior couple weeks, really the prior month, things have not been going very well for this Toronto Blue Jays offense. And, you know, last week kind of came on here and said, yeah, but, you know, look at the league-wide context. Like, the Blue Jays are still an above-average offense. You know, offense has been really depressed this season, and run scoring isn't, you know, what it once was. Well, that argument no longer applies. Like, Blue Jays are just, like, straight up a below-average, or, you know, maybe generously right at MLB average offense right now. And the Blue Jays are not going to be a playoff team with a below average or MLB average offense, unless their pitching is just like unbelievable, which like it has been, but yeah, I don't know. I still think it's just a tough few weeks. Like, I still think it is just like a tough skid. And I still do think that this team is going to hit. And I am basing that belief on talent and ability and on track records and on what's happened in prior MLB seasons. But I also, like, I can't tell anybody that it hasn't been tough to watch this Blue Jays club struggle to score runs, struggle with runners in scoring position, struggle to hit home runs. I mean, just the production has not been there offensively. And when we look back on this season, I do think we're going to look at it as a blip and just as a tough stretch, but it very much is an extended tough stretch right now that is impacting this team's ability to win games.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's even gotten worse. If you look at the numbers, you know, kind of week by week, which is never encouraging. I tend to agree, like, big picture, they're going to be good. You just look at that top four, that top five, you know, however you arrange it, and they have tried some different configurations in the last week or so. But if it's Springer, Vlad, Bo, Teoscar, you know, Lourdes, Espinal's been up there, like, these hitters are good. They're really good. Matt Chapman, you know, connecting with some real power lately, which is a good sign. They got to get Lourdes going, of course. And Kirk, you know, a huge pinch hit on Monday. Kirk has looked better for sure in the last few weeks. So I still think it's a really good offensive team. I still think that if I had to predict when we see that, my answer is always immediately. I mean, they're healthy. They seem to be pressing a little bit. it's been a tough stretch for this team. I think, you know, not only on the field with the mistakes that they're making and the lack of performance, but of course this weighs on guys between games, between at bats, in the dugout, in the clubhouse. I mean, it's not an easy time for these players. They got to turn it around. I think they will. I think that this offense will still be one of the better ones in baseball.
You mentioned kind of the lineup juggle, and it is something that a lot of people were kind of calling for a long time. Change the batting order, and that's what you always go to, right? Like when an offense isn't performing the way that you believe that it should, because you just want to do something. It's like, what can we do? You can't just like scream at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to hit more home runs, right? So it's like, what can we do? Oh, let's shuffle, you know, the lineup. Like, do you think that had an impact? Do you think that stuff matters? Why do you think the Blue Jays did it? Like, where do you kind of stand on the lineup juggle?
I think just kind of shake things up. You know, even just like having the roof open the other day, it's just like, all right, things are a little different. You know, there's almost like a desire to just create a little bit of a shift. Partly too, I mean, it was driven by health, just with Springer and the scare that he had. So he wasn't going to be available at the top of the order for, you know, at least that one game. So, you know, that impacts things. And yeah, just kind of shake it up. I think, as you say, and obviously the numbers bear this out, I'm sure lots of our listeners are very familiar with the research that's gone into this, but you know, you're not really going to totally change your offensive production by switching up the lineup. It can help you incrementally. It can help you with a few runs in the course of a year. You don't want to dismiss it, but it's not going to totally alter the complexion of a team's offense.
Yeah, and I don't think that batting order position has a meaningful impact on production. And I don't think that it means anything on a game-by-game basis. If anything, it's the sort of thing that means something over the course of like a full season, right? It's kind of like, you know, the stock market, right? Like, you don't want to just be like putting money in, out, buy, sell, like you want to buy and hold so you can see those returns over time. Same thing with a lineup, right? Like, I think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting second is the most optimal thing. Like, I think that's the best thing because it means more plate appearances for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., better chance of him coming back up late in a game. But that's over the course of a season, right? Like, you're not going to see that difference on a game-by-game basis. So if anything, now that Vlad's in second, the Blue Jays need to keep him there for the rest of the season. But the real impactful thing would have been if he was hitting second for the first 33, 34 games as well, whatever it was. Like, that was, you know, missed opportunity there. So I do think that, like, this the best configuration has your best hitter hitting second. So I do think for the Toronto Blue Jays specifically, like, Springer leading off and Vlad at second is great. And then if you want to go Teoscar, Bo, that works for me. You want to go Bo, Teoscar, what, either or in that situation, I'm fine. Like, I don't think that you're going to see a whole bunch of difference with who's 3-4 in that scenario. I think as long as those four hitters are your top four, that you're going to be good. But there is something to be said for what hitters experience subjectively in a game, right? Because like, we could sit here objectively and say, like you mentioned, you know, like, they've done research on this and there's been deep dives that suggest that, like, yeah, empirically, like, it's probably not going to make that big of a difference how you kind of organize guys. But if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. says he's most comfortable hitting third, and if that's what he experiences in a game, like, that's real and meaningful too. And that's hard to measure, right? And that's hard to quantify, like, what a guy, you know, is feeling in a game and how that impacts his performance. It's kind of like lineup protection, right? I don't believe the lineup protection actually exists. And I think there's actually evidence to suggest that, like, lineup protection isn't a thing. Like, this is just like a myth. But if the hitter in the box thinks it exists, and if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. believes that because Teoscar Hernandez isn't hitting behind him, that will impact how he is pitched and that will impact how he performs, then it kind of does exist, right? Because that's all that matters, is like, how is subjective performance at the end of the day? Because we're not talking about robots, we're talking about human beings. So I think that with the lineup juggle, it's similar to that, where you're kind of balancing the, like, what we objectively know to, like, be true with what subjectively players are experiencing in a game, and kind of finding that sort of middle ground to do what's going to be best for you to win.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, along those lines, it almost signifies to the team and everyone around that if you make a little bit of a shift, it's like, all right, we got to break out of this. Like, it's time. We need to, you know, have a turning of the page in a sense, even on a small scale. Now, you know, I think when it comes to barreling up balls, when it comes to really having those quality at bats where you're not chasing, I think that'll come over time. One thing that they can do offensively that I think would be instantaneous is just better work on the bases. And I think it would impact their run scored. I mean, we have seen the Blue Jays get picked off on a regular basis. We have seen them run into outs far too often. These have been lapses in attention. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. I'm not sure if it was on the podcast, but it might have been in a little video that we did on the off day last week for sportsnet.ca. But just there has to be some focus on those little things. And if you're Alejandro Kirk, you can't be getting picked off. Even, you know, it's really important for all these players to just stay focused and to take the extra base when you can, but you don't want to be caught in between. You don't want to be, you know, one extra step too far, because those outs do add up. I mean, that's a couple innings that they've probably given away so far simply by being inattentive on the bases. And that's a way you give away fewer outs. All of a sudden you have more outs to play with. All of a sudden you're turning the lineup over one more time and your best hitters get to hit more.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what has compounded a bit of the gloomy feel of the Blue Jays' recent stretch. So it's not only that offensively, like, they aren't performing, it's that they haven't been playing particularly crisp baseball either. So you mentioned the mental mistakes and, yeah, fundamental errors getting picked off, or Kirk, like, overrunning second base on that one. One play there that I can't even remember what game it was, but I think everybody will remember the play. It's a play that shouldn't happen at the big league level. We've seen sloppy play in the field, and it's funny, right? Because these two things work in concert with each other. Because if the Blue Jays were performing better offensively, if they were scoring 7, 8, 9 runs a game, little errors like that wouldn't be as magnified, because they would have margin for that error. So it would be like, oh no, we gave up an extra run, or we didn't score an extra run because of X, Y, and Z, but it's like we still won by 4 instead of winning by 5 or 6. You know, it would be glossed over and forgotten about. But because the Blue Jays weren't scoring, and because they were dealing with such thin margins, those miscues take on an added significance. And they look, it's important either way, whether you're scoring a bunch of runs or not, to just play clean, crisp, fundamental baseball, like, because that's over time what's going to lead to success. But we do notice that stuff a lot more when the Blue Jays are perpetually in these 1-2 run games.
Yeah, and facing the Rays, you know, that's a good team. If you're facing good teams, the Yankees also, right? Like, some of the teams they faced in the last week, they're going to capitalize on those mistakes. And then what we saw in contrast, you know, again, on Monday in that Mariners opener, the Mariners were the ones making mistakes. And, you know, over the weekend against the Cincinnati Reds, we'll see, but I won't be surprised if the Reds make a few mistakes that the Jays can kind of take advantage of. And really, you know, maybe they end up blowing out the Reds and it doesn't matter on the scorecard. But as you move forward, you're going to have more close games. If you're intent on advancing through the playoffs, you're going to be playing good teams. They'll take advantage of those mistakes. They will capitalize if you give them opportunities, and you need every chance you get. So might as well get in the habit now of playing that focused baseball. And something like not getting picked off, that's doable. That should be doable for major league players.
Yeah, and I think that Monday was a good game to build off of, right? Because it's not only, you know, the offense and the pitching was all good, but those little things were taken care of in that game as well. You think about that play that Bo Bichette had to make late in the game. Bases loaded, and Ty France hits like a pretty weak ground ball at him. And because of these like insane circumstances where there was only 3 umpires, so the crew was short a man, like the umpire was positioned in a weird spot, and Bo had to sort of like hesitate a little bit and read that play in real time because the ump was like in his field of vision a little bit, and it's like actually in his throwing lane a little bit, and he had to actually manage all of that and still make the play to get out at first in a bases loaded, like a really crucial spot.
Softly hit to short, charge by Bichette, and they get him. Boy, that had tricky.
That's not easy. That's not an easy play to make at all. And Bo Bichette did that like really well in the moment. And there were some other examples in that game of like, you know, good aggressive play in the outfield, strong throws coming back in, like not letting runners take the extra base. Like I thought that was a pretty well played game from a fundamental standpoint for the Blue Jays. So again, it's one game, right? And you look at the 2 weeks that preceded it, it's probably more meaningful, like the 2 weeks of poor play rather than the one game of strong play. But the thing now is to build off of that one game and keep it going through this stretch where your level of competition in the Mariners and Reds isn't quite what it was when you were playing the Yankees and Rays earlier.
100%. And I think, you know, we should be giving Bo credit for that play because, you know, he's had some stretches this year where it's been tough and he's made some errors. And there are times when he takes those hard, obviously, as most players would in that situation. But he really made some great plays. Two of them, one in the hole, the one you described as well, where he had to avoid the ump. I mean, those are tough plays to make. And it really reinforces that he has the skills to do it. I mean, the consistency, you know, he's obviously searching for more consistency each week, each month, but the skills are there. And it's cool to see on those days where he's combining the offense and the defense. And you're like, oh yeah, this is Bo Bichette right here. Like he got off to a slow start, but this is a guy who's, there's a lot of pressure on him. He's performing really well the last few weeks, but very much at the center of what the Jays are trying to accomplish.
Going to step away, but when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about the Blue Jays bats, and we'll also talk Blue Jays pitching, because there's some notable performances there that we must make note of. So all that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Today is Tuesday, May the 17th, and it is time now for Keeping It Light, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Pretty cool moments last week, Ben, as Albert Pujols took the mound in a blowout for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Albert's got his hand up. There you go. 54, but no one's going to forget what we saw tonight. Witness Albert Pujols with a baseball that he didn't hit as a souvenir. It's one he threw as a pitcher.
Cool moment because, like, the St. Louis Cardinals definitely had way better position player options to throw on the mound than like 40-year-old Pujols, but they clearly just did it so he'd have, you know, future Hall of Famer has the opportunity to do it. I think there was probably part of it that's like, this would be kind of cool and hilarious to see. And it was cool and hilarious to see Albert Pujols pitching an inning. Didn't think I'd ever see that before. You don't typically see the future Hall of Famer taking those reps. It's usually like the middle infield bench type, the utility guy, the up and down sort of edge of the 40-man roster guy who has to take that on. So it's cool to see a legend in that spot. And I guess that begs the question, Ben, like if we're opening this up to more than just the Bradley Zimmers or like pick your Jays, like utility edge
ghost
roster
Kikato
guy. Yeah. The ghost Kikatos
claimed, yeah,
of this world. I was going to say Santiago Espinal, but I feel like Espinal is actually elevated above that.
Yeah.
Right?
He's played
like
his way out of it.
Yeah. That's an everyday dude now. You can't risk him getting hurt. But so if we are now opening this up to more than just typical dudes, assuming that this player is not going to be injured, who on the Blue Jays roster would you want to see pitching the most?
Well, yeah, it is fun to contemplate. And seeing Pujols was so cool, just lobbing them in there, getting rocked, Evan Longoria getting the hit off him and asking for the ball. Really cool moments. And you could tell Pujols enjoyed it. Now one of two players, along with Babe Ruth, to have 600 home runs and a pitching appearance. So that was awesome. I think for me, you know, there are a couple good potential answers here, but I would go with Matt Chapman because his arm is just so good. And, you know, I asked him about this earlier in the year, how hard have you thrown off a mound? And he said that when he was, you know, growing up on Team USA, I think as a high schooler, he got up to 99 off of the mound. So this is a guy with some real arm strength.
Whoa.
And, you know, I asked him, you know, how hard do you think you could throw now? He said, you know, somewhere in the 90s, maybe upper 90s. If he was off a mound, then he was loosened up and really getting after it. So I would want to see that. I would love to see him, especially again, we're saying there's no chance of getting injured, right? So it's not like he's going to get Tommy John the next day. But if he could just let it eat out there and he was throwing 98 with, you know, let's say a halfway decent slider, he might actually be pretty good.
No, I think that's a great shout because we see some of the throws from third to first that he makes. And like those are like 86, 87 miles per hour. So that's not, you know, having off a mound with a windup and all that stuff, right? Like that's just like flat footed from third base. This is a guy with some pretty tremendous arm strength. But you know who might have even more arm strength than Matt Chapman? Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I know that because there was that play earlier this year where Vlad fielded a ball. He was kind of like right on the dirt right before the infield grass in front of first, fielded a ground ball, and there was an Astros runner running from second to third, and Vlad gunned him down at third from first. And that throw was off the top of my head, it was like 88 and a half miles per hour or something like that. And this was like not a throw Vlad makes commonly. And like since he moved across the diamond, he really doesn't need to use his arm strength all that much anymore. Not like something he works on or gets loosened up for. And he just like out of nowhere threw a ball harder than Matt Chapman has all season, which is just like another one of these insane Vladimir Guerrero Jr. things that he just does, like just out of nowhere. Like he is just so uncommonly talented and so good at so many things when it comes to baseball, and is just able to do these things cold, that I imagine that would transfer pretty well onto the mound. That if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had to pitch an inning, he like might bust out this like cutter that he has or something, or he'd be like fading weird changeups. He might have like a curveball. Like it would not surprise me at all if he went on, you know, if he had like two strikeouts, because he would just be like, he'd have like velo. I think we know that. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he also like had some actually pretty interesting pitches they just pulled out of his back pocket, because we just see this guy do things so often that are so uncommon. So I think the Vlad would be my guy.
Yeah, I like the idea of Vlad with fastball changeup and Chapman as fastball slider. I mean, that's it. I can just kind of see that. I think it'd be pretty fun. But yeah, Vladdy has so many skills, even like, you know, lately just watching him barrel around third base, like what a sight that is. I want to see someone put together a supercut of Vladdy just charging past Louis Rivera, helmet off. Like he really does fly once he gets going. That max speed for him is up there. So I like that call to see Vladdy on the mound.
Yeah, he can move. And also his average home run trot, I don't know why I was looking this up on Savant the other day, but he's like one of the slowest in baseball as well. So like one of the slowest guys around the bases after he hits one out, but also like a guy with some pretty sneaky speed when he needs to deploy it. Hey, let's just stick with Vlad for a second here, because he's like having this really strange stretch over the last couple of weeks. Like he is both streaking and slumping somehow. He's on a 13 game hit streak, and he's got what, 14 hits over that time, and 11 of them are singles. Like we're not seeing the power from him. We're not seeing the extra base hits from him. We're seeing him expand more than he has. It's certainly much more than he did last season. He is swinging at pitches that he shouldn't. And then he is also just doing crazy Vladimir Guerrero Jr. things where like he's just gets himself into a terrible count and then just comes up with this opposite field single and is almost just like frustrated that he has to, is almost just like, ah, fine. Like I know I can do this, but I'll do it just tonight, not make an out and get on base. I really wanted to drive a ball, but he's missed his pitch to drive already in the plate appearance. He's put himself in a bad spot by expanding. So he's like, fine, I'll just like shoot this the other way and take my single. Like that speaks to his incredible talent, but also speaks to the fact that like the guy is kind of going through something right now at the plate and doesn't have the best approach, I'll say, but like he just kind of seems to not be driving the pitches that he gets to drive, and he is expanding a lot more than I think that he should be. So like clearly there's some sort of an adjustment that needs to be made here, because the exit velo is still there. Like he still hits the ball as hard as anybody, but there's something not quite connecting with like just making that solid line drive contact to the wall, over the wall for extra base hits over a stretch in which he has hits in 13 straight games. It's such a puzzling stretch for him right now.
You know, it makes me think back to our discussion about lineup protection, right? Because so much of this is just Vladdy and the pitcher. It's just him and the decisions that he makes. But I just can't help but think that you know, if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. goes on a massive hot streak and Alejandro Kirk starts hitting home runs every few days and Springer's healthy and Bo keeps hitting line drives all over the place, I just think that that is when we will see the best version of Vlad Jr., who is extremely selective, who takes massive power cuts, who of course uses the whole field and hits line drives everywhere. You know, and of course, it's hard to kind of separate which one causes the other. But I do think that if some of those other elements start clicking, then we'll see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. start putting a little bit less pressure on himself and then getting back to the approach that ultimately gets him in the best position in the first place. And he could arguably do that now, and maybe he will. But I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to watch.
I do think that the Blue Jays collectively, to your point, are expanding too much or have been expanding too much. The Blue Jays they're an aggressive team. They have the fifth highest swing rate in baseball at 49.2% as a club. So they swing a lot, but they also have the 10th highest swing rate at pitches outside the zone, 33.4%. So you're swinging a third of the pitches you're seeing outside the zone. I mean, that's not good process. The Blue Jays need to expand a lot less. They need to force pitchers to come into them. And that speaks to a young lineup that is, you know, eager and aggressive, but also maybe trying to do a little bit too much. You mentioned it in the first half, right? Lineup that's pressing a little bit. Everybody wants to be the guy that breaks the team like out of its slump collectively. But, you know, this is also an organization that like really emphasizes swing decisions during spring training and really emphasizes swing decisions throughout the minor leagues. And we haven't seen great swing decisions at times so far. And like, look, it's easy for me to sit here when I'm not the guy who's like in the box trying to deal with MLB pitching these days. I talked about it last week. Like, MLB pitching is so damn good now, right? Like, the average fastball is 94 miles an hour, but you are not seeing as many hittable fastballs as you once did because we're seeing a lower rate of fastballs thrown in MLB this season than ever before. So like, you know, it's not easy to hit in the big leagues. Watch friggin' Hunter Green when he comes in this weekend. You mentioned the Reds were coming in, right? Like, look at his stuff, right? Like, you know, it's not just like the upper 90s fastball and the wipeout breaking ball. Like, that guy's changeup is like 90. You know, like, that guy's changeup is Hunjin Ryu's fastball, right? And the Blue Jays have seen more velocity than any other team in MLB this season. They have seen a steady diet of like really high velo fastballs and like really wicked off-speed stuff. Like, it speaks to the quality of competition that they have faced. And I think that as the Blue Jays, you know, see a lighter strength of schedule going forward, we'll see the offense come around a little bit naturally. So there's a lot going into this, a lot going into the skid, but I do think that like expanding and chasing too much is part of it. And other teams are doing a really good job of sort of identifying the Blue Jays are doing that and exploiting it. I think the Blue Jays need to adjust back.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, they can do it. Last year, when they were just piling on everybody, pitches were nasty then. I mean, guys were throwing 98. Sliders were breaking like Frisbees. Changeups had incredible fades. So they could do it then. They just got to get back to it now. And I know, of course, it's way easier said than done. But that's one of the big questions for this team right now.
And I saved this for the very end because I wanted to make sure that I said, look, the Blue Jays need to change their approach. They need to be better. They need to, you know, force pitchers to come into them. They need to not press, not expand, like all these things that we have said. They need to not make small mental errors. Like, we have been very critical of things the Blue Jays have done. There has been some bad luck. Part of this is bad luck for the Blue Jays, and I will just present these numbers to everybody and you can take them for what they are. But you look at a batting average on balls in play for the Blue Jays this year of .276. That is a bottom 10 mark in MLB. You look at a barrel rate of 7.8%, which is 12th highest in MLB. Hard hit rate of 43.7%, second highest in MLB. Again, second highest hard hit rate in baseball. And I know that there's like, you know, average exit velo isn't the best stat, but average exit velo for the Blue Jays at 90.4 miles per hour is the third highest in MLB. That all those hard hit balls and all of the like fly ball contact that the Blue Jays are making, the line drive contact that the Blue Jays are making, is producing an expected batting average of 261 that is fifth highest in MLB, and an expected slug of 450 that is eighth highest in MLB. Bad luck is at play here. I'm not saying it's everything. It's not an excuse, but the Blue Jays have had bad luck on balls in play. I just don't think you can argue against it based on the figures. The Blue Jays have made fly ball outs. So these are outs to the outfield on 41 balls in play this year with an expected batting average of 500 or above. So more than half the time these are hits, 41 of those balls to the outfield have been outs. It's the seventh most in MLB. Bad luck is not everything, but it has played a role in the Blue Jays slump to begin the season.
Right. And bad sequencing too, right? I mean, you think about the batting average with runners in scoring position. We've talked about this before, but you know, for anyone who's missed that episode or whatever the case, you know, it's doesn't reflect some sort of fatal inability on the part of the Blue Jays to produce when there's a individual standing on second base or on third base. They can do it. I think they will. And again, I think the bet for when that happens is always soonest, you know, and maybe by the time we record next, it'll be very different.
So let's not let the Blue Jays' offensive struggles shroud how strong the pitching has been for this club, particularly on the starting side. We'll talk about the bullpen to wrap up the podcast. But like at first, let's just, you know, have a little appreciation, I guess, for how strong the starting pitching has been from this club. You look at, obviously, Kevin Gausman has been that dude all year. Alek Manoah, like right there with him, pitching like a top 20 MLB starter this year. Jose Berríos probably giving up a bit too much hard contact, not missing enough bats, but is still finding a way to be competitive in his starts. And if you want to bet on his track record, I think that that's a pretty good bet because his track record is as extensive as anyone's. And then the back end of this rotation, Hyunjin Ryu and Yusei Kikuchi, both looking pretty good the last time out. And Yusei Kikuchi, his last few times out, you can go Ryu direction, you can go Kikuchi direction. I mean, which of these two guys do you want to talk about?
To me, you know, the return of Ryu, that's good. He's back. Solid start. And that's a good development for the Jays. But the Kikuchi emergence is really more notable to me as I kind of look at what's happened with this team in the last few weeks. And I think that, you know, clearly he's found a nice rhythm with his fastball and then with the kind of hard slider, soft cutter, whatever you want to call that pitch. There's certainly some different names for it floating around out there, but it's working. And so that's the important thing. He's attacking hitters better. He seems to be really pleased, as you would expect, with this kind of turnaround, giving him some confidence moving forward. He finally was able to face a team that was not the Yankees, Red Sox, or Astros after starting, you know, his first 5 weeks with his new team. Facing only those teams, did really well against the Mariners, did everything that you could really hope for, and it does look to be somewhat sustainable. So I think, you know, we were never going to write him off after a few rough starts. The Toronto Blue Jays weren't, their opponents weren't, but, you know, there was a certain amount of concern when he was getting hit hard. And I think at this point, as you're looking forward with Kikuchi, you're really happy to have him in that rotation. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, you're looking forward to what he can do for you when he does take the mound. And I think that the turnaround after these last three starts looks to be somewhat complete.
Yeah, these three starts in May, it's 17 and a third innings pitched, six hits over 17 and a third. It's wild. Also 7 walks. You'd like that to be a little bit lower, but 20 strikeouts over 17 and a third. I mean, this is Yusei Kikuchi at his best. And look, should be said, we've seen it before. He was an all-star last year, right? His first half of 2021 was spectacular. Like, what, you know, the first half Cy Young contender, and then it all fell apart over the second half. So obviously we need to see more than three starts, but this is also a different Yusei Kikuchi that we're seeing. Like, as you mentioned, he is trusting his fastball more than ever. He is working ahead because he's establishing that fastball. And when Yusei Kikuchi is working ahead, like, he's just so dangerous because there's so many different avenues he can go, because he got to guard against 96, 97 from the left side, plus the hard slider, plus the split change, which goes the other direction from the hard slider. The slider being as hard as it is, I think, is a huge advancement, because if you look back at, like, all the sliders that, like, he always had this hard slider. You look back at it with Seattle, he threw sliders at 86 to 88. He didn't throw them consistently like he is now, but he would occasionally throw it that hard. And if you go back and pull all of them up, he never gave up damage on them. And I'm sure this is how the Blue Jays, like, arrived at this, is they went back and they pulled all those up and they looked at it and they were like, oh, hey, when you throw your slider 86 to 88, you don't actually give up any damage. Maybe you should do that more often. And that's what they've gotten him doing. And the kind of, like, sneaky backdoor thing they've also done with him as well is they've eliminated his cutter. And that really wasn't a great pitch at this level. Like, it wasn't good when he was behind in the count. It wasn't, you know, it got crushed when he left it on the plate. So the Blue Jays, but he clearly liked throwing it a lot, because even in his early starts this season, you often saw him shaking from fastball to that cutter, and the pitch was getting damaged again. So the Blue Jays did kind of like a sneaky thing where they were like, all right, if you're not going to stop throwing it, we're just going to kind of like take it away from you. And you don't really throw it anymore, although you still kind of do, because like you said, it's like a bigger cutter is kind of what this slider is like. But they've just taken away a pitch that he didn't have much success with and incorporate a pitch that he did have a lot of success with, and kind of like Robbie Ray'd him in a way where he's just like fastball slider, fastball slider, fastball slider. He's got to keep it going. But through these first three starts, certainly he is seeing the results, and that can only help him buy in more to the process that's leading to those results.
And what was the difference last year with Robbie Ray compared to years past? I mean, he was attacking hitters in the zone. So, you know, he was, if not right in the zone, then very close to it. You know, a strike to ball slider maybe, or a fastball just at the top of the zone. But he was consistently throwing pitches that hitters thought were strikes. And so that's the essential here. And Kikuchi's stuff, you know, it's not so different. I'm not looking at the spin rates when I say this, or this, you know, seam shifted wake or whatever the case. But, you know, big picture, they're throwing fastballs that are 95, 96 from the left side. And then you've got a hard cutting pitch, whether you call it a slider, cutter, whatever you call it. That's a somewhat similar repertoire. And so, you know, it obviously worked for Robbie Ray. It's not working quite as well this year for him. But for Kikuchi, those are two really good pitches against major league hitters, and that's something that's a pretty big development for the Jays.
Hyunjin Ryu looked strong in his return to MLB. Velo was there. The changeup command was especially crisp, I thought, and especially important. He needs to continue building on that. And then I just, before we get to the bullpen, do want to show a little bit of appreciation to Alek Manoah, I think, who is just having a spectacular season, maybe not getting the credit he deserves for it. And it's weird, right? Because he's had these outings where he's sort of battled his command. He's had outings where he's hit guys. He's had outings where he couldn't grip the baseball. He's had like outings of poor bad ball luck or poor defense played behind him. Like, he's had a lot of crap going on around him in all of his starts this year. But every time at the end of it, his line says 6 innings, 2 earned runs. It's like, it's really remarkable how consistent he has been at time and again, finding a way to deal with that adversity, to log innings, to minimize damage, to keep runs off the board here in his second MLB season. I can't emphasize enough, it's not supposed to go this way. You're not supposed to like be this good this young. It's very rare. You much more often see young starters struggle at the big league level, or do really well when they initially get there and the league isn't familiar with their stuff. It doesn't have a ton of video and hasn't seen them a lot. And then the league adjusts to them, and, you know, kind of their second trip through MLB, they have to adjust back and they have their own struggles, or even just like the workload demands and the grind and the life kind of wears on them. Man, Alek Manoah has just like excelled through it all. And he is like standing here through his first 7 starts with a 1.71 ERA. Are you kidding me? Like, he is having an all-star first half here. First half to the first half, I guess. First quarter. We'll see if he can continue that. But like, if he keeps pitching the way he is, Alek Manoah is an all-star in his second MLB season and a Cy Young contender, and that is like, that's something else.
Oh yeah. Q1 has been very good for Alek Manoah. I think he is headed for all-star season. Really, he belongs. He belongs. There's no question. He's been great. So totally agree with that. Now, okay, as for the bullpen. So, you know, this is, if I'm the Toronto Blue Jays, Arden, I'm a little worried, honestly. I am, for a few reasons. Like, I'm looking at the performance so far. Hasn't been good enough. I'm looking at the health. And you've got Jordan Romano now battling a non-COVID illness. Okay, so, you know, hopefully he's able to return soon. You've got Tim Mazza, though. He's on the injured list. So your health is not ideal. Your reinforcements that could be arriving, in theory, Nate Pearson, throwing bullpen sessions, but not close. So it's not looking great. And again, the performance, even when they have been healthy, has not been strong. And I'm looking at strikeout minus walk percentage. We know the Blue Jays look at this. We know that that's an important number for them. It's something they looked at in spring. It's something they look at for potential acquisitions. As advanced stats go, it's kind of on the more accessible end, but it's basically, what's the relationship between the percentage of hitters that you're striking out and the percentage of hitters that you're walking? And obviously, you want there to be a massive gulf, way more strikeouts, way fewer walks. That's what the best pitching staffs do. And for the Blue Jays, if you look at the American League and where they rank in strikeout percentage minus walk percentage, they are last in the American League in that department. So again, to me, if I'm the Toronto Blue Jays, it's not like alarm bells going off, but this is a concern.
Yes, and it's one that will be addressed, I'm certain. It's one that is addressable, whether it's outside the organization, like we mentioned, like we saw the Simber and Richards deals come last year. I'm sure the Blue Jays are going to be scouring for those opportunities like as soon as like today, right now, because obviously they do need reinforcements right now. But it could also be addressed internally, and that's where it would help to have a nice story emerge from AAA Buffalo, whether that is an Adrian Hernandez and like the Bugs Bunny changeup that has like generated strikeouts at every level of the minors. And now he's in AAA on the doorstep, and maybe that could generate more strikeouts in the big leagues. Maybe it's a Graham Spraker with like the kind of weird arm angle on his fastball, which gets a bunch of swing and miss. Matt Gage. But you do kind of get to a point where you're like, geez, it would have really helped if Julian Merriweather like could miss bats, right?
Or Pearson.
Especially with runners on. Yeah, Pearson, I mean, you still want to see what he is as a starter, but the Blue Jays are almost getting backed into a corner here where it's like, our starting staff is fine and we really need help in our big league bullpen. And Nate Pearson obviously has the weapons to get big league hitters out and experience in like high leverage situations at the highest level. Man, it would have helped if like an Anthony Kay or a Thomas Hatch, like a guy like that could have been a bullpen option for you. I think it'll be a combination of things, of like pitchers inside the organization and pitchers outside the organization, that ultimately address this group. But I agree with you. It does need addressing, because even to this point, like I think the Blue Jays, like there's relievers like in the bullpen right now that should perform better. I just think they've been overused, man. You think about all those tight games early in the season, all the leverage that was thrown at this group, like that takes a toll, man. It's taxing. You can't burn through your bullpen early in the season because it's got to hold up over 6 months. So it absolutely like is something that I want to say should improve going forward, but it's something that's just been over leveraged to this point as well.
You know, I could see it improving, and I think they've definitely been used heavily. At the same time, if you're at the bottom of the American League, like you need a lot of improvement, and that's not all just going to come from rest. I think that maybe it is some sort of reinforcement, like you say, internally, but they just need more swing and miss. I mean, as much as, you know, you'd love to have your Adam Simbers, someone who can get a ground ball, or your Trent Thornton, who, you know, I know he's option, but someone who can eat some innings. But you need someone, and you look at the Yankees, like the Yankees are incredible with this, but they've got Chapman, they've got King, they've got Green, they've got, you know, Clay Holmes comes in and strikes people out. Like, I'm not saying that you're going to have a bullpen that's quite that good, but there are going to be situations where someone leaves a couple runners on and you need swing and miss. And right now, to me, the Jays don't have enough of it. Again, if you're looking for shopping that's relatively easy to find, the bullpen is a fine place to be because there's always selection. There's always opportunity there. But man, that to me is something that's kind of emerging as a concern for this team.
I will say that, so you look at a guy like David Phelps, right? So in 20 and 21, he was like nearly an 11% swinging strike guy. And you can go back to 2017, which is a bigger sample, around a 9% swinging strike guy. He's been 7% this year. So does he go back to career norms, or does he like continue missing as few bats as he has to this point? Jimmy Garcia is like a similar story. A guy throughout his career has been around like a 12% swinging strike guy, has been an 8% swinging strike guy this year. And so is that just a blip? Is that an aberration? Or do you trust that those guys can get back to what they've done over the course of their careers, and maybe that swing and miss corrects a little bit just from those guys getting back to what they've done?
You know, for something like home run rate, I would definitely say look at the career home run rate, look at the league home run rate. Like if someone's allowing 2.5 home runs per nine, that's, I don't believe that. But for something like swinging strike rate or chase percentage, like those things can stabilize pretty quickly. And so, you know, even for relievers who have only thrown a few hundred pitches in games to this point in this season, that's something that, you know, for Jimmy Garcia, for example, where it is down from 12 to 8, that is part of the reason that I'm saying it's a concern, is because that's somewhat indicative that hitters are not missing his stuff as much.
Never too early to talk about possible trades, possible additions,
that's right,
transactions. But if anything, like the Blue Jays should show that urgency. Like I think that was a big lesson learned from 2021, is like behave with urgency. When if there is a clear area of need and there is a clear shortcoming, address it. Like don't wait. Don't, you know, play it out. Oh, maybe we'll see this. You know, maybe Tyler Chatwood will be better, right? Don't make that mistake. Again, like go ahead and address it. Look, it's a tough division, the American League East, and it's a tough league this year. Yankees are off to a hellish hot start. We're in a position right now where like it might not be three American League East teams in the playoffs, right? Like you've got other teams that are performing very well. It's always too early to look at the standings, but yeah, the Blue Jays need to like start winning games and start putting their best foot forward towards the playoffs. So like a game lost in April, a game lost in May is still a game lost on your record. And if that's because your bullpen isn't up to snuff, then yeah, you got to address it.
Yeah. And I still think they'll be in the playoffs. I don't think you're saying otherwise. I think that, you know, that's still a very reasonable expectation for this team, but you know, it probably helps to start now making that push as opposed to waiting a couple more weeks.
No, what I'm saying is like the Yankees are off to like such a blistering hot start, yeah, right? Like 26-9. The Rays are being the Rays, right? And then you've got Minnesota that's playing really well. The White Sox, who you would like assume are going to play well going forward. The Angels are good this year. Houston's good. Like even with an expanded postseason, like I think there are just more really good teams in the American League this year than there were last so far. Right. So, you know, to begin the year, and we haven't even run into like a team that goes on like a fluky run of really good luck like the Mariners did last year and becomes, you know, and becomes part of it and forces their way into the picture. So, yeah, I think the Blue Jays need to win. That's what I think.
A lot of work ahead.
Blue Jays need to win, Ben. The Blue Jays need to win. We need to go. But I want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. I want to remind you that you can email us at the letters at sportsnet.ca. I want to thank you for listening. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.